Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blake. And another foul on Ward. This third for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although George Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dan Valentine standing right there. So
Izzo dying for a moving screen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn of The Athletic, here with Dylan Burkhart of umhoops.com. Dylan, happy March, man.
Happy March. It's finally here.
This is March, as they say.
This is March. And the basketball is heating up. It's crazy to think a year ago, this was the Big Ten tournament, which seems way too soon, but maybe we'll just never speak about that ridiculous scheduling quirk ever again, but
worked out for Michigan just fine.
It did, and now we're looking at a year where the Big Ten is going to be pretty exciting coming down the stretch here into the final week.
Crazier to think that there was no such thing as the moving screen pod. It was just, you know, this mythical vision out there just waiting to be snagged.
Now we're 21 episodes deep. Look at us now.
Here we are. And I've got a microphone now.
Yes.
For a second time.
Second time.
I had one earlier in this year. It mysteriously disappeared on a trip to Wisconsin. Some people have blamed me for losing it. Won't name names.
Some have blamed TSA for taking it.
Some have blamed TSA for a possible shenanigans. I think that might have walked. But who knows? But hopefully the audio quality, at least on this end, is better this week. We love your feedback on our technical issues. So if you,
you're also not heavy
sarcasm there. What was it?
You're also not in a hallway or
right
in a room being cleaned by custodial staff. So we're moving in the right direction, yes, in terms of location too.
I'm in the home office in the Kerrytown section of Ann Arbor. Your old hood.
Yeah.
For people that don't know, it's in a weird quirk. I now live in the neighborhood that Dylan grew up in, and he does not live here. So, you know, ships in the night, man. Ships in the night. But the pod has brought us together, and big week. Lot going on. Like I said, it's March 1st, and what a time to be alive. So we will start with Michigan coming off the win last night over what is supposed to be a basketball team from Nebraska. Not much fight from those boys, but a big concern arising on Michigan's side of things as the postseason approaches. Charles Matthews with an ankle sprain. ESPN's reporting that it's ligament damage. Everyone's losing their mind. And then Michigan comes back and vehemently says, no, it is not significant ligament damage, and back and forth we went on a controversial night during a blowout, Dylan.
Yeah, and what's interesting is who knows how bad the ligament damage is, but Matthews played the entire second half of that Michigan State game right after the injury, and Michigan was more than good enough to beat Nebraska without him. I think you could have probably assembled a moving screen pickup five and might have been able to take out Nebraska at that point. But it's still a very serious long-term concern for Michigan, and it's really tough to know with some of these injuries how they'll heal, right? Bielan was pretty adamant after. There's no prognosis or timetable for return. Yeah. It's just when he can play off of it and when that comes up to be.
They're in a tough spot, in my opinion, because technically you're still playing for a championship. You have two huge, difficult road games coming up at Maryland, at Michigan State. You could lose both of them with a healthy Charles Matthews, right? Conceivably. Let alone what this current version could produce if he can even get on the floor. So, you know, if it's into a situation where it's, yeah, I think I can go, put me out there, he's technically cleared, but you're still like, I don't know, man, like, you know, ankles, you tweak it one more time and suddenly it's, you're out for, you know, the foreseeable future. You're playing for a championship in the regular season. There's a potential championship in the Big Ten tournament, but really the only thing that matters is the NCAA tournament. So I'm not sure what you'd do with him if he gets into that, you know, 50-50, can he play, can he not? What are your thoughts on that?
You also have a week off before, or I guess 6 days probably, right, off before the game in East Lansing. So I would think about, that's a long time to rest. Like, it's actually one of Michigan's bye weeks coming into the final game of the season. So I think probably the emphasis is on trying to get him back for that game. It's pretty, obviously there's a tough game on Sunday afternoon in Maryland. If you have him, you have him. If you don't, you don't. But I would really think that heading into the postseason, he would want to play in that game, especially with how the game went down last weekend in Ann Arbor.
I would be very surprised to see him play in College Park. Do you agree?
Yes. I mean, how would you be surprised to see him play at Michigan State?
No, I mean, I just don't know the severity of it. And they were purposefully downplaying the injury when all the scuttlebutt kind of arose on with what Molly McGrath said during the ESPN broadcast.
And to be fair,
it kind of unraveled at the end, too, in speaking with some people at Michigan of the claims of how that conversation actually went down.
To be fair, she attributed it to speaking with Charles, not with Michigan.
Right. And then there was a later conversation where apparently there was kind of like, yeah, it was kind of said this way. And it's very unclear what was actually said in that conversation. And I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus. I have no idea what went down. But, I don't feel like I have any real grasp, put it that way, firm grasp on how serious this is, or if it's a, okay, week-to-week, day-to-day thing, or if it's a, you know, man, is he ready on, you know, March 19th or whatever the opening day of the tournament is?
So, I'm not a doctor, but when you sprain your ankle,
you sure
there's
about that?
Ligament damage, like, that is just part of it, right? It's not like a ankle sprain with ligament damage is somehow different than a ankle sprain.
I have no idea. That what you said sounds right to me. I think ligament damage makes an ankle sprain sound like something way more than an ankle sprain, but I think it's still just an ankle sprain. And now there's the question of, is it a high ankle sprain? Is it a low ankle sprain? Because those things, you know, the dreaded high ankle sprain.
Is it a foot injury?
Sure.
Seems like a lot of ankle injuries turn out to be foot injuries more often than not, right? We saw that at Michigan State this year.
And at Michigan with Caris LeVert.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have no idea. Let's operate right now because we want to talk. I don't know how much we have to talk about last night's game other than maybe Colin Castleton and some other things, but put it this way, if Michigan is without Charles Matthews for the last two regular season games of the year, what percentage chance do you give them of splitting those two games?
Splitting.
I mean, going 2-0 without Charles Matthews is a pretty big ask. I think you would hope at best for a split.
I would say maybe 45%.
With the win at Maryland being the far greater possibility.
Obviously more likely just because I don't think they're as good of a team. What do you think, where would you put the odds at, I guess, first of all?
I'd say 30% chance.
That they win one
without
Matthews.
Yeah.
And
it's a big ask for them to win at Michigan State on senior day with them likely playing for the Big Ten championship. This game at Maryland is huge. Now, Michigan has played fairly well there. The game last year was one of their best performances of the year, and it was a similar situation, a weekend day game. Place was rocking and rolling, and that, ironically, was kind of a turning point for Charles Matthews down the stretch, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of lost in the woods there. He was coming off a game, I think, at Penn State where he only played like 15 or 17 minutes. He was a total non-factor and was basically lost. I think that might have even been when Beilein made the Bambi comment. And then he went to College Park and had a great, great game, or at least got back on track and was relevant again. And that kind of propelled him to what you saw in the postseason. But Charles Matthews, so he played well that game against Maryland. And in their matchup earlier this year, he made 7 baskets, scored 14 points.
Played some great defense in that
game.
Played great defense, yeah.
So I don't know. I think with the lack of depth, and, you know, so much can go wrong right now for Michigan without Charles Matthews. It just takes one or two fouls, and a game is going to get spun on its head, right?
What do you think is the biggest, I guess, loss with Matthews out for Michigan? Well, I think we can both say that the defense is a huge issue, and you lose a lot. It's just the individual one-on-one wing defender. I'm more thinking about offense and how things change positively and negatively without Matthews.
Well, I mean, just having a natural scorer, just a scoring option is pretty big. I would say it's way more. It's the defense and the minutes. He not only plays rock solid defense, but he it's also someone who's accounting for 36 to 37 minutes on the floor.
Yeah, I think you lose a huge part of just having a guy that you can put on any one player's having a great game. And I think in hindsight, we probably should have known the injury was worse than expected when he spent the entire second half kind of just guarding Kyle Arnes in the Michigan State game rather than guarding McQuaid or Henry or Winston or anyone. So you lose that. The offense is interesting. You see, you bring Livers into the mix and you have legit shooting on both corners of the floor. Mm-hmm. Beilein hit on that after the game. That gives you a lot of spacing. But the problem is you really only have, even to a greater extent, Xavier Simpson to create all that ball-screen offense.
Right.
Isaiah Livers basically cannot dribble in the half court or full court right now within the flow of the offense. So that's a big issue. I wonder if you'll see them start to invert things a little more. And I also think you'll start to see Jordan Poole, who played a lot of three last night, maybe get some of those minutes if you're going without Matthews for an extended period of time.
When you say invert things, explain that to folks.
Yeah, I'm thinking you run some stuff from the – like usually Michigan will run the side ball screen action from the left side of the floor, which is where Matthews plays. And that's where you'll see him get a side ball screen. He loves to kind of reject it and go baseline, stuff like that. Ignas Brazdeikis plays essentially the same position on the other side of the floor. It's just Michigan runs more action through Matthews as a baseline. So with Livers at the three, maybe you flip things around and let Brazdeikis run some of that kind of side ball screen action coming from the right to the left and kind of attacking with his left hand. You worry about him passing. You worry about Isaiah Livers passing. It's really just a Xavier Simpson show at this point, if Matthews can't play, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you're going to, you know, and a lot more from Jordan Poole.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be the kind of the word I like to use for Michigan's offense often is skeleton key. And I feel like right now he's kind of the guy that unlocks all the doors if they're going to survive without Matthews.
Yep. Should we talk a little bit about Colin Castleton?
Yes.
First big off the bench last night and played really well. What did you like out of his performance?
I like that he was taking his time. You know, it was not this manic catch the ball, either try to dunk on someone or try to get up a shot as fast as humanly possible or just do everything in every moment, right? He caught the ball, he collected himself, he used the footwork that they go through every single day, and it's one of those things where like eventually it becomes instinct, right? And I think that's what you start to see. This is kind of when things settle in a little bit on guys who become more reliant on what they learn as part of the program as opposed to just themselves as basketball players. So as an example, it would be Mo Wagner as a freshman had those great moments in the Battle for Atlantis.
And that was really just Mo Wagner being super skilled and being able to do these things naturally. Like, I'm sure when they went over the tape or whatever, like, he was probably wildly out of position and not actually doing what the blueprint was for Michigan. Mm-hmm. Whereas later in the year, when he kind of came into himself in the NCAA tournament.
Around this time,
it was far more just what the actual system calls for. And I think that's what you saw from Castleton last night.
So after being around Michigan practice for a few days, how overwhelming would it be to come in there as a 18-year-old freshman that barely knows English and speaks mostly German?
I mean, it picking is up that vocab. Completely crazy. And the fact that, like, Beilein did have to speak in meters, because he actually, at one point, they were going through a drill, and he was talking to Brandon Johns, and he said to him, like, okay, you need to be 2 meters from him, and Johns just kind of looked at him, and he said, sorry, like, I slipped up, that's what I used to say to Johns, and that was kind of a, like, or that's what I used to say to Mo, and I'm sitting on the sideline, you know, laughing. It was true, like, he said that a couple times, that he had to start coaching in meters, and we all kind of rolled our eyes at it, but no, apparently he was legitimately doing that, but... frankly, for any freshman to follow along with what the hell they're talking about is pretty damn impressive. Castleton, he's still light, but he's put on about 20 pounds or so. He's up to 230 something. But he's skilled. He's definitely skilled. What do you think of his overall game?
I thought he looked, like you said, he looked natural. Like, he looked like doing the right thing at this point felt natural to him. And it didn't really always feel like that early in the year. I think you see a far greater ceiling to his game compared to anyone else that Michigan's really put at the five, just in terms of a natural feel for the position. He has the legitimate size, even if he's still getting a little bigger. I think you have to just ride with him at this point, because I'm not sure what you're getting out of anyone else at that spot. And I know John's played really well against Indiana, but that was 2 months ago, basically, and he has not been able to get back to that. And you see, like, I think back to the Michigan State game, John's kind of had a catch in the paint that Simpson made a great pass to get on the ball, and he kind of kept it down low and didn't manage to go up and finish. And that's really – Xavier Simpson will make you into a scorer just with his ability to pass. Yeah. All you have to be able to do is pass, pivot, and finish.
Yeah.
And – Castleton did that 5 times last night, and how many bench buckets has Michigan got rolling to the basket all year, other than maybe John's at Indiana? So I think he showed something. I also think you have to understand that Nebraska easily has the worst front court in the Big Ten.
Holy hell.
And they had no idea, no interest in playing ball screen defense, and that was – He's going to face tougher challenges. He's going to make mistakes, but I think he shows that potential that I don't know you get from other spots.
And here's kind of ironic probably is not the right word, but what I do find interesting about how this whole thing has played itself out is now Michigan's kind of getting bit in the ass for spending the whole year trying to turn Johns into a five, which he clearly is not. If he had, you know... This is all hypothetical, but if, you know, he had been working at a 4 spot all year, which is his natural position, you know, you would like to have that right now. You would like to have that extra depth at the 4, because Castleton is clearly the better option at the 5, and Johns is essentially useless right now. Whereas maybe if he's playing the 4, he's a little bit more comfortable, and he's kind of wearing his own skin a little bit, and maybe he can give you minutes that would alleviate for the loss of Matthews. Now, this is all super easy to say in hindsight, and depth at the 5 has always been the biggest question, so it makes sense that they tried to use Johns there, but it's kind of crazy the way that worked out.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. I don't completely buy it, because...
You heard that? I just thought I had a fresh take.
Well, people have been saying that playing Johns at the 4 would just unlock his ability, and it'll just all flow naturally.
Oh, I
think the 5's a lot easier to play than the 4. And he looks
a natural center.
Maybe that's it. He just looks like he doesn't quite know what's going on, and I don't know if changing the spot is going to help that.
Yeah, right. I was just saying that, like, it would be pretty convenient right now for them to have Johns be a serviceable player at a forward spot, because now they suddenly need minutes at the forward spot.
I mean, it'd be convenient if the whole freshman class could play because they really fell out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they haven't really been able to play
right.
this year, which is, explains most of Michigan's depth issues and why they're the second shallowest bench in the country.
Even if they were great, though, even if all five freshmen were amazing, Beilein would not suddenly be playing a 10-man rotation. It would still be a 7-man rotation.
That's true.
This is based on 40 years of evidence. So, okay. Do we have anything else to talk about on Michigan, or do we hop over?
You can hit on Maryland quickly.
Sure. Tough place to play. Tough matchup. Maryland, they've played recently, which I would say goes in Michigan's favor, probably. And Maryland's coming off of a road loss at Penn State where they get smacked by 17. Is that like a wake-up call, or is this the beginning of the, you know, fizzle out at the end of the regular season, go one and done in Chicago, losing the first round of the NCAA tournament? This is what Maryland does.
Ouch. So for a while there, Maryland had really fixed a lot of its turnover issues. I wrote in the when I previewed the game back in February, I was like, oh, they only turned the ball over a lot, twice in 10 games, something like that. Ever since the Michigan game, those turnovers have been back in a big way. They've turned it over on basically 25% of their possessions in each of the last four games. That's not good. And that really kind of turned the game in Ann Arbor, where they just turned the ball over, over and over and over again in that first half. I don't know how to explain it. I know they're young, but they've played 30 games now. It's kind of getting to that point. Maybe it's from playing two bigs. They're obviously one of the most talented teams in the Big Ten, but these two home games, it's sort of right on the edge, right? They have two home games. They win both. They finish 23-8, 14-6 in the Big Ten. That's a really good year. They lose both, 12-8. 21-10, and it's like, well, what the hell happened here?
Yeah.
So it's a big spot for them. It's just hard to know what you're going to get at this point, I would say.
They haven't lost a home conference game. Their only home losses this year are Virginia and Seton Hall. They have wins over Purdue and Wisconsin in that building. You know, it gets rocking in there, and, you know, for a Michigan team that's going to be probably a man down and looking for guys to step up in big moments. It's a really big ask, I think, to go in there and get a win in this game. And it would be really impressive if they can pull it out.
Yeah. The good part for Michigan is I think they match up naturally a little bit, where you have Teske and Fernando. He dominated Fernando in the first game. He just shut him down.
Especially the first half. I think Fernando had a nice 8-minute stretch in the beginning of the second half, and that was basically it, right?
Yeah, but it was one of those you just got completely embarrassed, probably shoot out at halftime, and then go get your buckets, but it was too late. Simpson obviously is a good matchup with Cowan. They did a good job. Really, beyond that, it's all about locking down on their shooters, Wiggins and Ayala.
Yeah.
And Michigan did a good job of that, but that's also kind of a Charles Matthews sweet spot where he can close out and really do that. Isaiah Livers is not quite the same at closing out on shooters. It's not as natural to him. He's probably spent more time defending bigger players this year. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. If those guys get going from the wing, you're in trouble, because that's really how Maryland gets out and wins a game.
And could certainly be a game where you miss Charles' physicality, his ability to go up and get rebounds, especially, you know, Maryland can really, if this turns into a volleyball match and they're just going up and grabbing offensive boards, you know, I think that could possibly be Michigan's undoing here. They had, what, 11 offensive boards the last matchup, but they missed a ton of shots.
Yeah, I don't worry about defensive rebounding that much with Iggy, Livers, and Teske on the floor. I mean, all three of those
And
guys,
Livers went and got him 10 boards last night.
Yeah, I mean, he can rebound from that spot. I don't worry about that too much. It's really just, can he stay in front of wings, and can he close out without fouling?
Yeah.
Sometimes he kind of just runs like crazy at a shooter and flies by or fouls him. He's not the only Michigan player that has problems with that, to be fair. But turnovers, Maryland last in the Big Ten in offensive turnover rate and last in defensive turnover rate. Michigan, if they win that battle comfortably, you just have to hit a few shots and you have a chance to win on the road here, I think.
Yeah, I think the two biggest things is if you're a Michigan fan to watch for in this game in terms of Maryland flipping this thing would just be, you know, are they making threes and are they not turning the ball over? They went 6-for-22 on threes and committed 16 turnovers in the last game. That'll do it, right? That's how you score 0.8 points per possession and 52 points in a game. Are they going to do that at home is the question that I have.
Yep, and that's what we'll find out on Sunday.
Absolutely. So Michigan State rolling along now. They've had a week off. Not sure if it was a good week off or a bad week off because, I mean, I know it's good for Matt McQuaid to get some rest, but they're playing really well. They kind of had one of those grooves going where you say just get right back on the floor, I think, where they're really clicking. And Cassius Winston, you want to bottle that up and throw it out there as much as possible. But, you know, we talked a lot about Michigan State's win over Michigan in the last pod. They have not played since. So I think if anyone is listening to this who missed that one, Michigan State fans, you should probably go back and check that out in terms of us actually breaking down that game. But this matchup with Indiana tomorrow, I'll be there. I'm looking forward to sitting on the surface of the moon up down there at Assembly Hall. Indiana, they're one of the strangest teams in the history of the game. Their last two Big Ten wins are over Wisconsin and Michigan State. Super impressive. The only problem is the 12 losses that surround those two wins. So what do you make of the Hoosiers?
What do you make of this team? I mean, they have probably the best pro prospect in the league. They have one of the better senior scorers. They should be so much better than they are, and they're just, for whatever reason, not. They have pretty terrible late-game execution. It'd be easy to see them at 8-10 and on the bubble comfortably. Like, it would like they've blown so many games or just had awful decision making, but they also could have lost both of those games against Michigan State and Wisconsin. Both were ridiculous overtime games. I don't know what you can even say about Indiana at this point other than Romeo Langford can be dominant. He can also shoot step back threes. I love that they won this last game when he finally drove to the basket.
Yeah, and it was perfect.
I mean, maybe Archie's coaching him up.
I like seeing that. That was like some people framed it as like the redemption of Romeo Langford. Oh my God. I mean, no, it was Romeo Langford using common sense and using the best part of his game. He only took 3 3-pointers in a double overtime game. Like, that's what I'm talking about. And probably had his best performance.
Draft scouts want to see the 3-point shot.
Well, Indiana fans want to see wins, so.
So what stands out, I guess, to you about that last game in East Lansing? What went wrong for Michigan State?
It was so bizarre.
Is any of it repeatable?
It was such a bizarre game, and I don't think it's replicable. You know, Romeo was not good at all. He went 6-for-18 from the field. Terrible late game decisions. What's his name? Juwan Morgan gets hurt, right? Was that in the first half, if I remember correctly?
Yep.
He gets hurt in the first half, and then out of nowhere, they get these wonderful performances from Deron Davis and Devontae Green off the bench. And Michigan State didn't play well particularly, if I remember correctly. I don't remember too much about Michigan State's performance. I remember more just kind of scratching my head at Indiana's performance. And they had a bunch of guys who just got back, right? What's his name was suspended right before that.
Devontae Green had been suspended.
And Deron Davis was hurt.
Deron Davis had been hurt.
Right.
And both of those guys have played fairly well since, if I'm not mistaken. They've been at least like giving them solid minutes since that game.
But like Michigan State had a fairly clean game, 9-for-21 on threes. They only had 10
Winston
turnovers.
Was
Winston was good. Like, it didn't make any sense. Like, they got beaten in this game. And then Indiana fell off a cliff again.
Yeah, Indiana shot 35% on twos and won that game. The thing that stands out to me looking back at the box score is Indiana was just dominant on the offensive glass. They rebounded 44% of their missed shots. And I would expect
Can't imagine
more
that.
Of that again. Like, they're going to crash.
Yeah.
Whether can Michigan State beat them with their transition, or can they clean up the defensive glass and not let them get after it? Because that's really the weakness of this team as you get smaller and smaller without Nick Ward. I remember that game, Kenny Goins blocked 8 shots, but when he's blocking all those shots,
right,
he's not grabbing rebounds. That's what I remember talking about afterward.
It was such an outlier. There is that word again. Among Indiana's games, like, they're only 10th in the league in offensive rebound percentage, and they went up.
Nick Ward shot 1 of 9 at the free throw line too.
That's right. That's true. And there was something else. There was something else quirky on Michigan State side. I forget. Maybe McQuaid was something weird. I don't remember. I see them going in there and absolutely hammering Indiana in this game, personally.
Lock it in.
KenPom's got it at 8. I would take 18.
So you're done with Indiana.
I'm done with Indiana.
If Indiana wins out, are they on the bubble?
No. Get out of here with that. Wait, like, wins out, like, goes to the Big Ten championship game?
If they win these last 3, how many do they need to win in Chicago to be on the bubble?
Have to get to the Big Ten championship game.
They have a lot of Q1 wins.
They're terrible.
A lot of Q1 wins.
They are 5-12 in the Big Ten, man.
We'll see. I think I like Michigan State here. All the momentum. But I don't think it'll be easy. I think Indiana went through a phase where they were not playing hard. Probably around when Michigan came through there and they just rolled over. I think it'll be a competitive game. I think Winston is the best player on the court and wins it, though.
They really haven't been blown out. They got hammered at Minnesota by 21. Other than that, all the losses that preceded the Wisconsin game was 5 points to Indiana, or sorry, 5 points to Iowa, 3 points to Ohio State, 2 points to Purdue, 6 points in overtime at Iowa. So, yeah, it would be going against the recent trend, but I still think Michigan State absolutely runs them out of the gym.
And I'm taking Tom Izzo over Archie Miller in late-game situations, despite the loss in East Lansing.
Indiana currently 13th in offensive efficiency in the Big Ten, going against a team that is playing about as well as anyone. So Michigan State's now number 1 in the league in offensive efficiency, number 3 in defense in conference-only games. So what else do we have on State?
Cassius Winston locked for Big Ten player
has to be. If he is not, like, damn near the consensus Big Ten player of the year, then it's only a matter of name. Like, the name game of Carson Edwards and Ethan Happ were bigger names entering this year, and people who are not actually watching games making lazy votes. I'd say the same thing for Big Ten Freshman of the Year, too.
Who would you go there?
Brazdeikis.
Freshman is tough.
Take Romeo Langford's name off of Romeo Langford and tell me. I mean, if you're going to go with Wieskamp or AO or something like that, okay, I can buy that, but it's not
Yeah,
Langford.
I wasn't saying Romeo.
Okay.
But you have basically 5 freshmen who I think are all pretty.
I would vote Brazdeikis, but now I also watch him every game. But I really like AO. I really like Wieskamp. I also like
Georgie
Shmasikinvili. A big fan of him. But if Romeo wins it, there will be an asterisk next to that.
And who's your 5 for all Big Ten right now?
I hate this question.
I think 4 are easy.
Winston, Happ, Edwards. Both of those are under protest from my conscience, but those 2, Bruno.
Yeah, those 4 are basically a lock for me.
Yeah. And then the 5th spot, it's almost like damn near week to week. I would, especially if Michigan finishes in the top 3, I'd put it this way. If there were if the team banquet were held this week, Xavier would probably win team.
I don't think there's a probably
team MVP, right? So I'll put him.
I would
say
that's slam dunk.
So I'll put him as first team all conference.
I agree. I think you can make a pretty strong argument that he should be.
Yeah.
I think it'll end up being someone like Lamar Stevens or Jordan Murphy on the team, because right. I don't know. It's very hard for someone who doesn't watch Michigan play every game
mm-hmm.
to single out Xavier Simpson and vote for him as first team All Big Ten. But I think if you ask every coach who's played against Michigan,
totally,
who they have to prepare for at most, it would be Simpson.
Yeah,
it's a tough spot though. I don't. You can I like you and I can make the case, but I don't know if that's going to resonate across the conference.
No, I agree, and it'll be. Yeah, I weigh winning teams probably too heavily, but that's my opinion. That's how I feel about, you know, where these honors should go. Like, you have to be pretty unbelievable for if you're on a not just like a losing team. Like, if you're 500, okay, and you've carried that team through the year, like, that's one thing. But if you're on a bad team, like, you better be Jimmer Fredette, like, circa whatever year he was at BYU, for me to put you up on, like, the first team if you have, like, you know, if your team goes 6-14 or something like that. But it's really difficult. It's going to be difficult this year because the league is so bunched up, you know, kind of from that, I guess, how many teams will finish with double-digit wins? If Ohio State or Minnesota can win out, that would be one more. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So you have 7 teams with 10 wins in the league. You know what I mean?
That's a big. I don't think you're saying Minnesota's going to win out. They still have to play Purdue.
Or no, well, if Ohio State gets 2 wins, right, then they'll get to 10 in the league. Or I said,
I mean,
or if Minnesota gets to 10, it would put. I'm just saying you could potentially have 7 teams with 10 wins or more.
I would be surprised if either of those teams gets to 10 wins.
Well, Minnesota definitely won't. They're going to lose out.
Oof.
Yeah, sorry, all guys.
Right. All right, bring in the heat. We're not even into the power rankings yet. I just wanted to hit on that a little bit because that time of the year is coming up. And kind of interesting conversation. I think if Winston is not the player of the year, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
He's pretty much proven that and has been really the only high usage player in the league who's still been efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of pushed that boundary of how many possessions can he use while keeping his efficiency. He just keeps going. So kudos to him.
And his two top fellow contenders are flawed players, really. They have flawed candidacies.
Flawed candidacies.
Yeah. I dropped both of them. I submitted my final 15-man list for the USBWA All-American list. I dropped Happ and Edwards from the list.
That's fair.
Cassius Winston remains on the list.
There you go. Ballot has spoken.
But you know what I mean? Like, if you're the player of the year in the league, you should be able to play the last 3 or 4 minutes of a game, and you shouldn't, you know, be a historically bad free throw shooter. And in Edwards' case, you shouldn't go 2 for 20 in games and take so many horrific shots.
The thing about Carson Edwards is he does everything for that team and they could win the Big Ten.
Sure.
So you have to at least respect that. I know he's not the most efficient player, but it's sort of the way the team is built, if you ask me. His shot selection and things like that. I have a hard time. I'm not saying every shot he takes is a good shot. I'm just saying that there are very few other people on that team who can dribble or do something with the ball. And
yeah, I mean, I give him all the credit in the world for being, you know, the focal point of every team's defense, every single game. Everything is thrown at him. And, yeah, he has to do everything and more. And he does get those guys' looks. They have been scoring, but, like, not. There's a lot of possessions, though, where I'm just like, that's, you know.
But here's the thing.
I understand that he has to do everything, but that is just way, that's a wasted possession. You know, you're talking about, the guy's taking 278 three-pointers, and he's shooting 34%.
here's the thing. Cassius Winston is that important to Michigan, this version of Michigan State right now, and he has just kept up his efficiency.
Totally.
Although, if he has a bad shooting game, that could be an interesting situation.
Well,
like, Michigan State can't afford for Winston to have a bad game. It's kind of remarkable that Purdue has won some of these games when Edwards goes 4 of 24 or whatnot. So, I don't know. Matt Painter, coach of the year?
Whoever wins the league.
Whoever wins the league. All right. I've already made my point about this, so that's okay. I'm good with that.
I think we'll have an interesting episode. When does the award come out? Does it come out like right after on the
right
Monday?
After the Monday, they do like a Big Ten Network show, I think, the Monday after
right.
the final week.
So we will go through and we'll do all three teams and we'll argue that out.
Oh, that'll be good. So stay tuned on Monday, a week and a half from today.
Love it. Okay, power ranking time.
Let's
motor through these guys. Did I have the first pick this week?
You did.
I did. Let me pull up the document here. I don't have to. I know who I picked first. Number one is Michigan State for all the obvious reasons. You know, now it's just a matter of them closing this thing out. It will be very, very interesting in the rematch with Michigan's. With Michigan, obviously, next weekend. But what are they on? 5-game winning streak. They've clearly cleaned things up since that three game losing streak. And you know, Indiana on the road, Nebraska at home, Michigan at home. I think it's a strong likelihood they finish this thing 17-3.
Certainly looks that way right now. I think the game in East Lansing will be a fun one, to say the least, just with how close together these two games are, especially if Michigan's health, that could be a lot of fireworks up there. I've got Purdue next. Purdue is really in control of its own fate. I know you've been trying to shoot them down week after week, but
I know.
Matt Painter just keeps on winning, so
I'm eating that one.
I don't know what's going on there. They have Ohio State at home tomorrow, and then they go to Minnesota and Northwestern to close out the year. That Minnesota game seems like the most likely spot where they could slip up, not really because Minnesota is great, but because kind of the same thing we said before Michigan went to Minnesota. Bubble teams beat top 15 teams at home mm-hmm. late in the season. It's how they get into the tournament. And I think that's kind of the game to watch on Tuesday. And I'm sure Michigan will be watching closely if it can win in Maryland.
Do you give Ohio State any chance?
I guess that's Sunday, right?
Do you give Ohio State any chance of winning there after just beating Iowa by 20 on the road?
Yeah, I think Ohio State is just a really solid team that – if they hit a few shots, they're one of those teams that's just really solid defensively. And if they get hot, make a few shots, you could be in a game. And Purdue will give you jump shots. It just comes down to whether Iowa State can kind of get going in that regard. But I don't think that I know the game wasn't very close in Columbus, but Ohio State's a lot different team now, I would say, than they were back then. And like even games when Ohio State kind of turtles late in the game, like they completely fell apart at Michigan and Michigan State, they were competitive for, 30 minutes, right, in both of those games. So I don't think they'll be wowed by the environment or anything like that. I give them a shot. I just don't think they'll win.
I mean, it's incredible. These dudes have won 12 of their last 13 games since Michigan State beat them at Breslin. And beat him pretty handily in that game. You know, this is just a completely different squad over the last 2 months. It's pretty incredible to see.
Completely different season if they don't win that overtime game at Wisconsin. That Friday night game changed everything for Purdue. I mean, if they lose that, they're 9-7, 2-3 in the conference. I think that changed their entire kind of outlook on the season.
I'll buy that. And then they've just avoided any you know, the hiccup. They tried to piss one away at Penn State and ended up pulling it out.
At Indiana, at Nebraska.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, number three, obviously Michigan. We've spoken enough about them, so we'll hop to number four.
Number four, I have Wisconsin. The good news for Michigan fans is that they lost this week along with Maryland, which locked up the double bye for Michigan. Wisconsin is a good team. They have not been able to get one of those wins against the top teams in the league to kind of put them in that top tier, I would say. Right? They have not won at any of the contenders. They beat Michigan at home, but that's really it. What's the ceiling for this team in the NCAA tournament?
The ceiling? Sweet 16.
Yeah, this is a Sweet 16 team? Do you think? Would you pick them to...
No.
Say they're a five seed or whatnot. Would you pick them to get out of the first weekend?
No.
Just no? That's all you got?
That's my analysis. No. When your best player can also be your undoing, I'd have a hard time picking you to...
You're not getting a Christmas card from the Hat family.
I know, I'm sorry. I mean, he's had a wonderful career and all that stuff, but it's just like, winning time is winning time, man. And there's just been evidence, you know, the evidence is overwhelming of why they will come undone when it matters the most.
But what the hell does this team look like without him?
Oh, I'm not saying that. I mean,
I'm just
course.
Thinking for next year.
They better draw a lot of charges, win some games for you. 45-40.
Well, we've got our preview for Wisconsin next year done. All right, who do you have next?
I have at number five in our moving screen Big Ten power rankings, I have Maryland. Weird team. We got into them a little bit earlier on here, but I'll ask you the same question. What's their ceiling in the NCAA tournament?
They certainly have the talent to make the second round, but they also have the turnover bug to lose in the first round.
Mm.
I mean, if they play, they're the team that I think you would probably end up looking long and hard about a first round upset just because of, I guess, reputation. You know, I don't trust teams that turn the ball over more than once every five times down the floor.
Yeah.
It's just not really a winning recipe. And it is crazy to me because it's a team built around a junior point guard. You shouldn't have those issues, and they've not been able to fix them.
Do we want to get back into my Anthony Cowan takes or no? Okay. We can move on. Who you got next?
Ouch. I've got Ohio State next. Really good win for them this week against Iowa. A win that they absolutely needed at home. They got it in really emphatic fashion. Left Fran McCaffrey cussing up and down at the officials. This Ohio State team, like I said before, they're just solid. They're ninth in the Big Ten in offense. But if you let them score, they're going to beat you because they play really just solid defense for what they are. I'm not sure they're the most talented team in the league by any stretch, but I could see them. I know I said that I couldn't see them getting to 10 wins, but I could see them winning two of their final three. They go at Purdue, at Northwestern, and Wisconsin at home. That Wisconsin home game might be the one to, I guess, wrap up a NCAA tournament bid, you probably think.
I would think so. I feel like them dropping 90 at Iowa was like the Michigan Michigan putting 90 on Texas A&M in the NCAA tournament last year, where you're just like, wait, when did this team? Oh, okay, they can randomly score.
It was in Columbus.
Yeah, I understand.
You said at Iowa.
Oh, whatever.
Justin Arnes, 29 points, 6 threes. Talk about outliers. How many points did he have the rest of the year?
Yeah.
Not 29, I'll tell you that.
Okay, let's hop over to number 7. I will take Iowa, which is, Jesus, what's going on over there? They got They're suspending announcers. They're suspending coaches. Crazy times for one of the stranger teams in the league. But 21-7 overall, 10-7 in the league. They lost two of their last three with L's to Maryland and Ohio State. Fran berating an official in a hallway.
We need your Fran takes.
I mean, he's not in control of himself. And I like fiery coaches and all of that, but his emotions overwhelm his intelligence, it feels like to me. I think he's a good coach. I think they run a unique style. But if I'm a athletic director and I have a job opening and he is available, I have major qualms with the way that he carries himself. And, you know, I find it funny that a lot of Iowa fans that are with Fran will say, oh, he's sticking up for his guys, and that's what he says. You know, I stand up for my guys and da-da-da-da. Well, you know, I've also sat close enough to hear Fran say some things to his guys that are, you know, I wouldn't wish upon anyone. And a lot of coaches do that, but, like, you know, the whole, this is us sticking up for each other, I'm not buying that. I think if Fran is really pissed that he lost a game and his team played like shit, and he is blaming someone else.
He also kind of...
It's a 20-point loss, and you're yelling down at officials.
Yeah, did you watch the press conference?
I read the quotes, and it was clearly a guy who is not apologizing for what he said or how he carried himself, but for getting caught.
100%.
Right, and trying to, like, throw shade and blame the writer who put it out there on Twitter. Well, how about you not scream in public in a hallway like a lunatic, you know?
And that hallway at Ohio State is right, sort of like right there. All the teams are right there by where the media is and everything. It would be hard not to.
Yeah, the media room is right next to the hallway.
Yeah, right next to that visiting locker room. There's kind of like a curtain or something, but it's all right in the same spot.
Right, exactly. It's a curtain.
So maybe save your profanity-laced tirades for a more private venue.
Did you say tirades?
Tirades. I don't know. I can't speak right now. It's been a long day.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning. 10 a.m. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Does a unique style mean just not playing any defense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Iowa pushes the limit in terms of how far you can go by playing the worst defense in the league. Like, their offense is really, really good and hard to stop. It's hard to be 10-7 with the worst defense in the Big Ten. And they really kind of do that every year.
Number one three-point shooting team.
Yeah, third best offense. But you're at a 500. It's just – and they have talent. I don't know.
I mean, they're a good team.
This team's not going anywhere. I don't trust them in the slightest bit.
Fair.
Where do we got next? We've talked enough about Iowa. Minnesota. Oof. this is sort of – they're picked here because they have more wins than other people. But, man, not great for Richard Pitino. Lost 6 of their last 8 games, including at Rutgers. They picked up a – ugly win at Northwestern where they were obviously the better team. They just kind of got out in transition and ran them off the court. But Minnesota's the team that the computer numbers always said wasn't as good as its record. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of seeing that down the stretch here. I know they're playing some tough games, but man, I don't see anything to believe in here either.
No. And if the rule stands, if you want to be an NCAA tournament team, you have to beat NCAA tournament teams, right? And Minnesota's had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity in these recent weeks to kind of finally put the gift wrap on their NCAA tournament bid, and refusing to do so.
Road win in the Big Ten is Wisconsin. And at Northwestern. Oof.
But looking at their resume as a whole, their only wins over NCAA tournament teams, they beat Iowa at home, they won at Wisconsin,
maybe Washington.
I mean, yeah, I guess Washington's 13-2 in the Pac-12.
Although they did lose to the worst high major team ever last night in Cal. So it's not a great look.
Yeah, but Pac-12, they got to get one bid, right? And if Washington, the regular season champion of a power conference team, is not going to be left out. Like, if they don't win the Pac-12 tournament, they're getting a bid. They're
we'll
in.
We'll see.
They're in.
Does Minnesota get in the NCAA tournament?
No.
No?
No. I already said they're going to lose out.
Okay.
So they'll finish 8-12 in the league with three quality wins.
All right. Next up, you've got the hottest team in the conference.
Penn State. The fighting Pat Chambers. Three-game winning streak. Man alive. Team no one wants to play right now. They've got, in the last 3 weeks, wins against Michigan, Nebraska, Illinois, and Maryland. Pretty good. Only loss is to Purdue. So, playing their asses off. They're scoring the ball. They put 95 on Nebraska. They put 83 on Illinois. They put 78 on Maryland. That's after putting 75 on Michigan. So, you know, a team that was really flawed offensively is finding a way. I haven't watched enough of these games to know what they're actually doing to do this, but I did see that. Did I see that Pat Chambers told Goodman or somebody that if they began conference play by playing the way that they have since they started 0-10, that he would finish in the top half of the league?
I did not see that quote, but I mean, look. So I have the Bart Torvik up right now for just, so it's his rankings, basically like KenPom rankings for just February.
So since, yeah. And
the last month.
And in February, they are 5-2.
5-2. Where do you think they rank nationally in terms of how they've been playing just among all teams in February?
Rank in what?
Adjusted efficiency overall.
Oh, overall.
Nationally.
40th.
7th.
Holy shit.
So, just based on how they've played and adjusted efficiency in February, they've been the best team in the Big Ten over the last month.
What is going on? I wish more people wrote about Penn State basketball, because I'd love to know what is happening.
The problem is they lost every game in January.
Right.
So,
what percentage, if they are playing like the best team in the Big Ten, rank them among contenders in Chicago. Now, the problem is going to be that they're going to have to... They can get out of Wednesday still, right?
Yes, I believe so. It's really... It's tight in there, but I don't know why they couldn't get out of Wednesday. I think the two teams I like out of that bottom group are Penn State and Illinois to make a little noise. Maybe Indiana. I would say those are the 2.5 teams that I would look at to make a surprise run. Well, and obviously,
what about Northwestern? That's Chicago's team.
Get out of here. Just Northwestern and Nebraska ready to pack up their lockers. They are done.
I really wouldn't want to, other than Northwestern and Nebraska, I wouldn't want to play any of these teams early. Even like Rutgers. Rutgers can go out there and beat some higher seeded team and mess things up for sure.
Minnesota,
I wouldn't fear either. They got one and done trip written all over them.
Yeah, what you want is to be somehow drawn against Minnesota if you're one of these bad teams. But, yes. Like, on a neutral floor, I wouldn't think Penn State or Illinois would be that much of an underdog to most of the league, right? I mean, Penn State's 44th overall in KenPom, Minnesota's 47th. So it's not like there's a big gap there. Penn State would probably be favored on a neutral court. So you can't look just at the conference record in that sense.
Where's Minnesota going to finish in the league? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah. The money spot is going to be I don't see Minnesota making it out of Thursday, regardless of who they play. But anyway, that's a whole conversation for another day. Where are we on this thing?
We are on Penn State. I've got Indiana next. I mean, what is this? Just who do you point the finger at with how this season played out for Indiana? Is it all on Archie Miller?
I think some of it's on Romeo.
This team beat Marquette. They won at Penn State. They beat Louisville. They beat Butler. They were 12-2, and then everything went sideways. Is that coaching? I mean, is it just losing close games? Like, what? How can you even get to that point?
They lost bodies and at a wrong time, and then completely seemed to lose their confidence and took some L's and didn't respond the right way, and then they unraveled. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff behind closed doors that I know I certainly have no idea about, you know, and who does know about it would be beyond me. But anyone who's been around a team that has a season like this knows that there's stuff going on that that we don't know. So I think it's any combination thereof. And they just...
The wins over Michigan State and Wisconsin are kind of damning to me because it shows that they have the talent to beat anyone in the league and they just don't bring it every night.
If they beat Michigan State, do you feel like that is, for a second time, do you feel like that will be a reconciliation of sorts for your preseason pick of Indiana as the Big Ten champion if they beat the eventual Big Ten champion twice in the same year?
Well, if they beat Michigan State twice, I don't know that they will be
eventual champion. That's a good point.
I would say that there's probably no redeeming my pick when they lose seven games in a row and then five games in a row. I'm not trying to defend that terrible pick any longer. I'm off of that.
Fair. Because you know they'll beat Michigan State and then lose to Illinois and Rutgers to end the year.
And that is why I think you have to look at Archie, and I'm like, what is going on with this team?
Yeah. I wonder how he has handled, as it's come unraveled, him having the focus on the right things. Because as anyone who knows Indiana knows, when it goes wrong, you have it coming at you from every direction humanly possible. Alums, donors, board of trustees, internal, external, parents, right? And when it goes bad, how you respond in terms of your time management, in terms of, you know, what you are focusing the most on, that's the hardest part of coaching through a season like this.
Yeah, and that pressure at somewhere, like, it's crazy just across the Big Ten, at, I guess, the different levels of pressure on a coaching job, right? Like, compare what Archie Miller's going through to Chris Holtmann, who's having an okay season, but it's... Even if he was 14-14, everyone would be like, whatever, basketball's not good this year. It's just sort of a different it's a different beast at Indiana.
Yeah, when Archie went 7-9 in the A-10 in his second year at Dayton, there weren't, you know, the first two pages of the newspaper every day being written about what's going wrong, and it wasn't constant sports talk radio trying to dissect what's going wrong and hot takes left and right and ESPN up your ass and everything else in the world, you know, just constantly the walls are on fire. You get to coach through it. You get to work through it. So it's hard. It's a hard spot. Next one, number 11, I am taking Rutgers, which is still just kind of plugging along. Got another win this week to get to, or I guess that was last weekend, to get to 6-11 in the league. Excuse me. Win over Minnesota. So, continue to be impressed by the job that they are doing. Pikel had three wins in each of his first two seasons and now has a chance to get up to... Let me pull up their schedule if I can find it.
Got at Iowa, Penn State at home, at Indiana.
What are the chances you give them of finishing 2-1 on the way out?
12%.
Woo! Brutal. Yeah, that's tough. At Iowa, Penn State is playing really well, and then at Indiana is pretty tough. I say they get one more win.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That puts them at 7 and
13.
I can't do math. Pretty impressive. So, and again, a team I would not want to play in Chicago in that first game. Like, there's zero chance they have of winning 4 in a row or 3 in a row, whatever. But they'll they'll pick off someone. And I think the turnaround that they've seen this year actually probably stems from last year's Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, we talk about all these teams that could be dangerous. They actually won a couple games last year in New York. I've got Illinois up next. Illinois was kind of the lower half of the league flavor of the week there for a while, but they have turned around and lost three in a row. I just feel like their style of play is just so high variance that it is not – it's hard to find consistency, right? Like everything's just happening so fast and they can get out and get a big lead, but if things go wrong, they go wrong really fast and those problems kind of compound. They still foul like crazy. And yeah, they force turnovers, but they just haven't been able to find, I guess, that next level of consistency. I do think they can steal a couple down the stretch here. They go Northwestern and Indiana at home and then travel to Penn State. So I think they showed some progress probably down the stretch here. They're not going to be fun to play against in Chicago, but I don't think you, I don't know. Do you, how much do you fear them if you're playing in Chicago? Are you still, are they still the team you're most worried about?
The shine's come off a little bit, I would say. But on a quick turnaround, probably I'd be a little worried about them.
That's true.
You know, that's a tough spot, but the thing is that in this three game losing streak, it's not, you know, these aren't egregious losses, right? At Wisconsin,
no, that's
at
true.
Purdue, and then a home loss to Penn State, which is proving to not be that bad.
All right, here's a hypothetical for you. I just did the little Big Ten tournament bracket projector, and it comes up with Illinois in the 11, Michigan in the 3, Iowa in the 6. If you're Michigan, would you rather play Iowa or Illinois in the quarterfinal?
Iowa.
Ooh. Interesting.
I would like the idea of being able to use that loss out there against them.
That's fair.
For sure.
Side note, how do we make sure Michigan is not the 3 seed?
Oh, boy. That's a whole different conversation. That's a whole different conversation. If it ends up with, what's it called, Michigan State in the 1 seed and Michigan in the 3 seed, I might burn the whole city of Chicago to the ground with them playing at 11:30 a.m. Central Time and 8:30 Central Time. Would not be ideal at all.
All right, let's wrap this up. We got two more spots, and really, these
luckily
two spots
no one cares about either, so I don't think we have to break them down.
Just all race to the bottom with you've got. Well, let's just make your pick next. Who you got?
Number 13 is Nebraska. That was some half-assed stuff last night, as expected. I don't think anyone in the world thought that Nebraska was going to come in and play well in that game, and they lived up to that billing, and now they get to go to Michigan State next week, and they will be hammered again.
What do you think of the benching all the starters move that Tim Miles played there in the second half?
I think everyone is checked out.
Completely lost his team.
Yes.
And 13th is kind, but Northwestern still holds down the 14th spot with just awful offensive team. They just can't get it done. And again, I don't know how this thing is getting better either. So I don't know. I'm off Northwestern completely. Sell it all.
I'm just going to read these numbers off real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So in this 9-game losing streak, you ready for the total points they've scored in these games?
Lay it on me.
46, 52, 52, 79 randomly at Iowa, but that's because of whatever.
Fran ball.
56, 50, 49, 64, 50. That's a Division I basketball team. Got to score to win, man. And God bless them.
Big Ten basketball team.
God bless them. But that'll do it for this week's show. Make sure you subscribe to umhoops.com. All the great video breakdowns there and analytics and stuff that Dylan does. It's the best in the business. Check out The Athletic for not only my coverage, but our national coverage and our Big Ten coverage and feature stories. And if you're up for
it. In your story, man. You got to talk about the story you did last weekend. We haven't talked about that in the pod at all.
Okay. So I was embedded with Michigan for 3 days. leading up to the Michigan State game. So I basically clocked in midday Friday and spent practice with them, and then spent all day Saturday with them going through film and workouts and practice and scouts and more film and then more film and a meal. And then Sunday back on campus at 10 a.m. for individual workouts and then more video for Michigan State. And then the walkthrough and then the fast facts and all this stuff. And it was with the intention, obviously most people thought these two would split and the most likely being each home team winning. So, you know, I figured, okay, Michigan, we'll get the first one and I'll have this this 3-day story to kind of unpack how, you know, one element of the game and kind of its bring it from its birth on Friday to the execution on Sunday. And lo and behold, Michigan State blew that thing up. And so I had to kind of pivot with the story, and that ended up being the story itself, that sometimes, you know, the plan, a good plan can not come together, really. And that's what I wrote. And I think it offers an interesting look.
No, it's a really good look at just kind of the process behind mm-hmm. all of what you see for 2 hours on a Sunday yeah. afternoon and the 72 hours that go in before it. And I think, yeah, regardless of the result, that process is going to be the same. It was the same process on
yep.
Thursday, same process headed into Sunday. So that's really interesting. I liked it a lot. It was good stuff.
Well, thank you. It was really fun to do, and I do appreciate Michigan opening up the doors. This version of John Beilein's a little bit more likely to do that than past versions. And there was very little, like, it was literally fly on the wall. Like, they would just be going through stuff, and it was like I was not in the room. So it was eye-opening and interesting. And if anyone has any questions about that process or anything like that, I'd be happy to field them maybe on next week's pod. If you hit me on Twitter, if you have anything real specific that you'd like to know about what happens internally for that stuff. You know, within reason, I can try to tell you as best I can. So, is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
Subscribe to the pod, and we'll see you next week.
Be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers. Good night.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.